5. The belly of the whale. The idea that the passage of the magical threshold is a transit into a sphere of rebirth is symbolized in the worldwide womb image of the belly of the whale. The hero, instead of conquering or conciliating the power of the threshold, is swallowed into the unknown and would appear to have died.
Mishinama, king of fishes, in his wrath he darted upward, flashing, leaped into the sunshine, opened his great jaws and swallowed both canoe and Hiawatha. Longfellow, the Song of Hiawatha.
The Eskimo of Bering Strait tell of the trickster hero Raven, how one day, as he sat drying his clothes on a beach, he observed a whale cow swimming gravely close to shore. He called, "Next time you come up for air, dear, open your mouth and shut your eyes." Then he slipped quickly into his raven clothes, pulled on his raven mask, gathered his fire sticks under his arm, and flew out over the water. The whale came up. She did as she had been told. Raven darted through the open jaws and straight into her gullet. The shocked whale cow snapped and sounded. Raven stood inside and looked around. The Zulus have a story of two children and their mother, swallowed by an elephant. When the woman reached the animal's stomach, she saw large forests and great rivers and many high lands. On one side there were many rocks, and there were many people who had built their village there, and many dogs and many cattle, all there inside the elephant. The Irish hero Finn McCool was swallowed by a monster of indefinite form, of the type known to the Celtic world as a paisht. The little German girl, Red Riding Hood, was swallowed by a wolf. The Polynesian favorite Maui was swallowed by his great-great-grandmother, Hina Nui Tepo, and the whole Greek pantheon, with the sole exception of Zeus, was swallowed by its father, Kronos. The Greek hero Heracles, pausing at Troy on his way homeward with the belt of the Queen of the Amazons, found that the city was being harassed by a monster sent against it by the sea god Poseidon. The beast would come ashore and devour people as they moved about on the plain. Beautiful Hesione, the daughter of the king, had just been bound by her father to the sea rocks as a propitiatory sacrifice, and the great visiting hero agreed to rescue her for a price. The monster, in due time, broke to the surface of the water and opened its enormous maw. Heracles took a dive into the throat, cut his way out through the belly, and left the monster dead. This popular motif gives emphasis to the lesson that the passage of the threshold is a form of self-annihilation. Its resemblance to the adventure of the Symplegades is obvious, but here, instead of passing outward, beyond the confines of the visible world, the hero goes inward to be born again. The disappearance corresponds to the passing of a worshipper into the temple, where he is to be quickened by the recollection of who and what he is, namely dust and ashes, unless immortal. The temple interior, the belly of the whale, and the heavenly land beyond, above, and below the confines of the world are one and the same. That is why the approaches of and the entrances to temples are flanked and defended by colossal gargoyles, dragons, lions, devil slayers with drawn swords, resentful dwarves, winged bulls. These are the threshold guardians to ward away all incapable of encountering the higher silence within. They are preliminary embodiments of the dangerous aspect of the presence, corresponding to the mythological ogres that bound the conventional world, or to the two rows of teeth of the whale. They illustrate the fact that the devotee, at the moment of the entry into the temple, undergoes a metamorphosis. His secular character remains without. He sheds it as a snake its slough. Once inside, he may be said to have died to time and returned to the world womb, the world navel, the earthly paradise. The mere fact that anyone can physically walk past the temple guardians does not invalidate their significance. For if the intruder is incapable of encompassing the sanctuary, he has effectually remained without. Anyone unable to understand a god sees it as a devil, and is thus defended from the approach. Allegorically, then, the passage into a temple and the hero dive through the jaws of the whale are identical adventures, both denoting, in the picture language, the life-centering, life-renewing act. No creature, writes Ananda Kumaraswamy, can attain a higher grade of nature without ceasing to exist. Indeed, the physical body of the hero may be actually slain, dismembered, and scattered over the land or sea, as in the Egyptian myth of the savior Osiris. He was thrown into a sarcophagus and committed to the Nile by his brother Set. And when he returned from the dead, his brother slew him again, tore the body into 14 pieces, and scattered these over the land. The sarcophagus or casket is an alternative for the belly of the whale. Compare Moses in the bulrushes. The twin heroes of the Navajo had to pass not only the clashing rocks, but also the reeds that cut the traveler to pieces, the boiling sands that overwhelm him. The hero whose attachment to ego is already a nihilate passes back and forth across the horizons of the world, in and out of the dragon, as readily as a king through all the rooms of his house. And therein lies his power to save, for his passing and returning demonstrate that through all the contraries of phenomenality, the uncreate imperishable remains, and there is nothing to fear. And so it is that, throughout the world, men whose function it has been to make visible on earth the life-fructifying mystery of the slaying of the dragon have enacted upon their own bodies the great symbolic act, scattering their flesh like the body of Osiris for the renovation of the world. In Phrygia, for example, in honor of the crucified and resurrected Savior Attis, a pine tree was cut on the 22nd of March and brought into the sanctuary of the mother goddess Cybele. There it was swathed like a corpse with woolen bands and decked with wreaths of violets. The effigy of a young man was tied to the middle of the stem. Next day took place a ceremonial lament and blowing of trumpets. The 24th of March was known as the Day of Blood. The high priest drew blood from his arms, which he presented as an offering. The lesser clergy whirled in a dervish dance to the sound of drums, horns, flutes, and cymbals until, wrapped in ecstasy, they gashed their bodies with knives to bespatter the altar and tree with their blood. And the novices, in imitation of the god whose death and resurrection they were celebrating, castrated themselves and swooned.
Attis's is the sacrifice that King Minos refused when he withheld the bull from Poseidon. As Fraser has shown, ritual regicide was a general tradition in the ancient world. In southern India, he writes, the king's reign and life terminated with the revolution of the planet Jupiter round the sun. In Greece, on the other hand, the king's fate seems to have hung in the balance at the end of every 8 years. Without being unduly rash, we may surmise that the tribute of 7 youths and 7 maidens, whom the Athenians were bound to send to Minos every 8 years, had some connection with the renewal of the king's power for another octennial cycle. The bull sacrifice required of King Minos implied that he would sacrifice himself, according to the pattern of the inherited tradition, at the close of his 8-year term. But he seems to have offered, instead, the substitute of the Athenian youths and maidens. That, perhaps, is how the divine Minos became the monster Minotaur, the self-annihilate king, the tyrant Holdfast, and the hieratic state, wherein every man enacts his role, the merchant empire, wherein each is out for himself. Such practices of substitution seem to have become general throughout the antique world toward the close of the great period of the early hieratic states, during the 3rd and 2nd millennia BC.
And in the same spirit, the king of the South Indian province of Quilachara, at the completion of the 12th year of his reign, on a day of solemn festival, had a wooden scaffolding constructed and spread over with hangings of silk. When he had ritually bathed in a tank with great ceremonies and to the sound of music, he then came to the temple, where he did worship before the divinity. Thereafter, he mounted the scaffolding and, before the people, took some very sharp knives and began to cut off his own nose, and then his ears, and his lips, and all his members, and as much of his flesh as he was able. He threw it away and round about until so much of his blood was spilled that he began to faint, whereupon he summarily cut his throat.